Welcome to the Minute Maid Gang Podcast, episode 228. I'm Steve Borsch, and I'm on with Tim Elliott.
I feel that Miami feeling with that music.
It's Latin. Phil Wilson.
Hola.
Wow. And our very special guest host, Julio Ojeda Zapata.
Qué rico!
Oh, man, too bad we're not on video.
I have my hat with all the fruit on top of it.
Oh, you do?
All right. Very nice. All right. Very nice. Well, Julio, did you grow up in South America or was it Puerto Rico?
I was I was born in Ecuador, but spent very little time there. Most of my childhood was in Puerto Rico, so I really consider myself more Puerto Rican than Ecuadorian, I suppose.
Yeah.
No, I'm right. Boricua.
So that music takes you back?
Not really, sort of. Yeah, that's not super Puerto Rican music, but kind of. Yeah,
Every Hispanic has that playing in their kitchen, right, Tim? Is that what you're trying to say?
Oh no,
yeah. Well, you know, Julio, I got to tell you that we have friends that came from Peru.
Is that right?
And I have so wanted to just get in an older pickup and just drive through Mexico and Central America down, you know, through Ecuador and down into Peru. And
you don't want to do that.
No. Well, the woman she's a VP of marketing at 3M, yeah. who came from Peru, and she just said, you know, chances are you wouldn't survive. So it's probably not a good idea.
Bad idea. Planes are good. Planes.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. So, hey, I just want to start off because the whole thing about aging in place is really becoming a big deal. And I'm talking to some people about their healthcare startup. And, didn't Mojo Minnesota do something, Phil, that you went to?
Yeah, it was the Age Power launch. Yeah, I did a little quick piece on the site as well.
Yeah,
I read a little bit about it and check some links out. But, you know, Ernest Grumbles, who's been with us before and also is very active in Mojo, Minnesota, and a lot of the stuff, tech scene here in the cities, was the host of rolling out this cooperative with Ecumen to help fund or attract startups or individuals who are developing technology that will aid the cause of aging, you know, the aging population, you know, make aging easier, serve the aging population, that sort of a thing. So it's very interesting that, you know, and it's basically the plan is to try to attract somebody who's got, it doesn't necessarily have to be a working piece of tech right now. I mean, it could be conceivably and just, you know, the thought stage right now. It needs to be a little farther than that, but you don't need to have a customer base or anything like that. But, and then the payoff is to get a 6-month trial through Ecumen, some of their, senior living centers and things like that. So, I think it'll be kind of interesting to see what happens. What was really the big takeaway for me was, you know, it came up in the Q&A that you don't have to be a Minnesota company to participate in this. It's really open globally.
And it's something along the lines of a contest, correct?
Yeah, it is a contest. And so I immediately thought, well, is that really what Mojo's all about? Ernest did get back to me on that and said that, you know, really it's not necessarily about just working with Minnesota companies, but it's also attracting tech to Minnesota. So if a firm or an individual outside of the Minnesota area happens to, you know, win this competition or this contest, well, then they'll have to come to Minnesota actually to participate in the trial. So it does attract business.
Oh, okay. I didn't get that part.
I didn't either.
That wasn't clear on the website. I got to tell you that on their homepage, extremely impressive advisory council.
Yeah, very much so.
I mean, it's kind of a who's who of, you know, the woman that's the president and COO of Next Avenue, the PBS adventure on aging. They've got a whole site and videos and everything else. And a retired 3M VP and our buddy Kim Gerritsen from Ovative Group and many, many others. I mean, a very impressive group. Well, there's a lot going on in the space, especially with telephony. And I know TechCrunch has had some articles about startups that are focused on one in particular that it's a device that someone would carry with them. It has GPS and mobile access capability and all that. So you could basically pin this thing on somebody if they had Alzheimer's and be able to track them if they took off.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess I need that.
So it'll be interesting to see how this pans out. And I think they're taking applications through October 31st.
Okay.
So you can check that out if you would like. So it was good to see a lot of those folks and, a wide range of people in the audience as well. So it was really, really good to catch up with some of those and we'll see how it pans out in the near future.
Yeah. Well, and then Tarjay's doing something with Facebook, right? Tim, you're all over this, aren't you? Because of the
marketing implications. I cover retail. So in my day job.
Yeah.
So this is kind of genius. They're using Facebook to give away money to schools. So it depends on the community around the school. So the more people that...
Don't they have to vote on the Facebook page or something?
Yep.
Okay. Yeah.
But I think it's a good idea because you can get a lot of people, involved, and Facebook is the way to do it.
Right.
So.
Well, at least the parents, since the kids are leaving Facebook in droves.
Yeah, because
you're gonna put this out on Twitter now.
Yeah, because mom and dad are there.
Yeah. Exactly.
So you messed it up, Phil.
How did I mess it up? Me personally?
Yeah, you messed
it up. It's all my fault.
It's all your fault.
It's all my fault.
You went on Facebook, and that was.
Oh yeah, that's it. And started stalking my kids.
Now your kids are on Snapchat.
Yeah, that's true. That's scary stuff.
Yeah.
Oh geez.
So anyway, you go there, and I don't know. They've got something. I'm looking at their page now, and I can't figure it out. But at any rate, the Strib article talks about how people are going to vote on their page, and based upon that, they dole out the money.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's pretty good idea, though.
Julio, what are you seeing these days? I know you've been sort of on the professional break here for the last couple of weeks, but I know that your lust for tech never stops. So, what are you seeing happening these days? What's exciting you?
I love tech so much that I never really go on vacation, and I'm not kidding. In fact, spent all vacation working on a book about mobile productivity. We can talk about that at some other point. But one of the things I was sort of keeping my eye on while on vacation is LTE, how LTE, slowly spreading in Minnesota. And it's starting to take shape. Verizon has a fairly statewide footprint, but AT&T, T-Mobile, and Sprint are coming along. T-Mobile recently deployed LTE in the Twin Cities, and I just heard the big news. I don't have a date, but kind of the big news that I just heard from a Sprint PR person yesterday was that. LTE in the Twin Cities is somewhat imminent. They wouldn't give me a date, but they were hinting very strongly that that's coming down the pike in fairly short order.
Wow! Finally, Phil. Huh?
Well, yeah. I was actually in one of the Sprint contractor stores yesterday because I've been having some really serious issues with my Wi-Fi and my data.
What?
Yeah, I know. It's very weird.
HTC One is the perfect phone.
That's what I would think. But, I was at a Twins game the other night, and I could not get any data connection whatsoever. And, I was talking to these folks, and to Julio's point, they said, they're very much working on the LTE network. And a lot of times that is causing just serious outages with data in some of the spots simply because they're transitioning over. At least that's what that was their.
Oh, great! But no 3G for you, huh?
But the flip side to that is, I'm hearing from a lot of people that they're unofficially getting very good Sprint LTE performance in a lot of places in the Twin Cities. One person told me that good 30-40% of the places he goes, he gets LTE service now. Yeah. So it's really starting to come together, which is good because the Pioneer Press switched everybody to Sprint iPhones, and it was a little annoying. It was the only carrier that doesn't have LTE in the Twin Cities, but that's about to remedy itself apparently. So,
well, my daughter's all over the Twin Cities with her LTE iPhone 5, and she just gushes about it. She's got great access, she says.
And then
I was going to say, have you tested T-Mobile's LTE here locally?
A little bit. The one field trip I'm going to do fairly shortly here, possibly on Monday, is I'm going to hop on 35 Duluth bound. I'm going to go north on 35, probably as far as Toby's, because AT&T very recently lit up LTE along that strip of 35. So hypothetically, you should be able to like watch a Batman movie, you know, within high quality, riding shotgun in your minivan. I'm going to put that to the test. I'm going to take a little field trip with my family and see how that pans out. I'm kind of interested in that.
So does your wife drive and you watch Batman? Is that, and you claim that as work? Is that the plan?
It's still in the realm of vacation, but I'm always playing with tech. We took a little field trip to Red Wing a few days ago, and I was like, no problem. Verizon has a statewide LTE footprint. I'm good to go. And I had crappy service. I rarely got LTE coverage. You know, it was barely 3G, often it cut out completely. So the Verizon's claim that they have statewide LTE coverage is technically true, but you know, your performance may vary depending on where you are.
Yeah. Well, remember when 3G rolled out, all the phones, you know, it took a while to support them. The iPhone didn't support them right out of the gate. And battery life was a big problem. Are you seeing the same kind of thing with LTE, Julio?
A little bit, but there's some phones coming out that that kind of lick that problem, like the new Motorola Droid Max phone that claims to have 48 hours of battery life. Wow. So the trick with that is just to look for a phone that has really decent battery life.
But they do that with a big honking battery, right?
Yeah, but I got the phone on loan from Verizon just last night, and it's surprisingly thin. There's a Droid Ultra phone that's brand new, and that's super 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 thin. It's amazingly thin phone. And then you put it next to the Droid Max, which is sort of it looks almost identical if you look at the phones head on, but if you put them edgewise, there's not a lot of difference. It fits in your pocket just fine. So the whole battery life thing is starting to come along. iPhones obviously still have crappy battery life. My hope is the September iPhone event will reveal a phone that has improved battery life. That's really kind of top priority for Apple right now.
So is the battery life on the iPhone 5 because it supports LTE, or is it too thin?
No, the iPhone battery life is mediocre at best compared to some of the phones that are starting to come out.
Huh.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Well, so one of the things I wanted to talk about is kind of the smartphone race itself. Have we sort of run the course of specs, and now it's just a matter of features and maybe build quality and other kinds of things?
Not necessarily. I spent a good chunk of my vacation playing with the Nokia Lumia 1020.
Yeah, that's the ultimate camera phone.
Oh yeah. Man, and I was like skeptical, but I basically used it as my go-to camera for a good month. And it takes amazingly good photos, even in low light conditions. So camera is one area where there's still kind of a tech race going, and it's not a megapixel race because the whole megapixel thing is kind of deceptive, because you can have a low megapixel camera that takes great cameras and a high megapixel camera that takes crappy cameras. So that's kind of not necessarily the spec you want to look at, but. This camera is 41 megapixels, you could have crappy 41 megapixel shots, but this camera, it all comes together. It takes really, really good photos, and since they're 41 megapixels, you can blow them up and zoom in on details and still have a really good photo. But the camera does kind of a nice trick where when you take a photo, it stores a large file, and then it scaled down 5 megapixel file. And so you have two files. The big one stays on the camera. The small one uploads to SkyDrive automatically. So you're covered. And I'm not a big Windows Phone fan necessarily, but this camera is the sort of thing that would make it very tempting for me to look at Windows Phone. Windows Phone in general is a very nice technology. The apps, you know, are starting to come along.
Well, if Nokia took that phone and somehow in a crazy state put Android on it, do you think that would just be like the killer phone?
That's not going to happen, but you're going to eventually see Android phones and iPhones that have, you know, cameras that are comparable in quality. So that's eventually going to shake itself out. So this is the leading camera phone by far at the moment. That's not going to last very long. The two, you know, to recap our conversation, the two areas where you really need improvement, where things are really weak right now, are camera quality and battery life. And those, you know, you're starting to see phones that sort of lick these two problems. The Ultimate Phone is a phone that does both, and we haven't seen that yet.
Have you done any testing with the Moto X?
No, there's there's a Moto X inbound to me. I understand I should be getting it on Monday. But the interesting thing with the Moto X is that all its whiz-bang features, like, you know, flicking your wrist to start up the camera, like seeing the notifications on the screen the, you know, the voice control where you say, I forget what the phrase is. You say a specific phrase to wake up the phone and then give it commands. All of these features that, have been hyped very highly, with the Moto X, they're all present in the Droid Ultra and the Droid Max. These two Droid phones have all that stuff also. They have the same processor. And so, All of these cutting edge Android features that were demoed with the Moto X, they're all in these other two phones. The only thing that's unique about the Moto X is you can customize the appearance, and it has a sort of an interesting form factor with sort of a curved back, which signifies a larger and longer lasting battery. So the look and feel of the Moto X is unique. But the way the Android behaves is identical on these other two phones.
Well, isn't the listening to you all the time and having the ability to, you know, to give it voice commands whenever you want, isn't that also unique to the device?
Not unique to the Moto X at all.
Really?
The Droid Ultra and the Droid Max do exactly the same thing. Oh. I sort of ran down the checklist of all the Android features that were demoed with the Moto X. This is no secret. Motorola is not, you know, trying to keep this under wraps. All of these features, all these much ballyhooed Moto X features, are not really Moto X features. They're Android features unique to Motorola, and are present in these other new Motorola. All the new Motorola Android phones that are coming out, they all have this. So don't be fooled. You know, don't buy a Moto X thinking you're going to get these unique features, because they're present, you know, across the Motorola line.
You know, you've been doing a lot of shooting in Instagram and now Hipstamatic's new Ogle service and all of that. And are you using a variety of different devices? So, I mean, you obviously used the Windows phone, the Lumia that you just described, for that one particular post. But are you using different devices all with your same account?
Yeah, the frustrating thing with the Windows Phone is the relative lack of Instagram accessibility. There's no official Instagram app, and there are relatively few ways with other apps to get your photos onto Instagram. One of the big exceptions is I'm not sure how to pronounce it. I'm not sure if it's Ogle or Ogle, but the new Hipstamatic app is it's very nice. If you'll recall the old Hipstamatic app, you sort of mixed and matched your lenses and your films and your flashes, and then you took a photo, and whatever came out is what you got, which is different from the Instagram model, where you can sort of play with photos after the fact. Hipstamatic sort of went slightly in the Instagram direction, kept all its films, it kept all its lenses, but it lets you, after you shoot a photo, it lets you play around and see what you can come up with, which is like Instagram. wonderful app. It's been available on the iPhone. It is now on a Windows Phone. And it's really, really, really nice app. It sort of falls within the category of non-Instagram apps that I sort of keep in a folder that I use for Instagram purposes. I have this folder on my iPhone with a whole bunch of iPhone apps that are all Instagram compatible. I've gotten really tired of the Instagram filters.
They're boring.
I know them all. They're kind of getting boring at this point. And so I've sort of turbocharged my Instagram experience with all of these other apps that have the capability to post to Instagram. At the moment, Ogle is probably my favorite because I already have an investment, in lenses and films from the old Hipstamatic. You can transfer all of the lenses and films that you purchased on Hipstamatic. Automatically over Ogle. So they're all in Ogle. I've forgotten completely about Hipstamatic. That app is ancient history for me. I love Ogle because I can take a picture, and then there are sliders. You can slide. There's a lens slider and a film slider. You can sort of mix and match and come up with almost infinite combinations. You literally spend hours on this. Come up with a photo you like, and then bam, you can post it automatically to Instagram, to Twitter, Facebook. And Ogle has its own social network. And so I've been having a lot of fun with that. And so I compliment the Hipstamatic folks highly for this app because they've really done a nice job. Whether it's going to take off, whether it's going to be a hit, I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to tell whether it's going anywhere, but it's an absolutely gorgeous app, and it's an integral part of my Instagram shooting kit at the moment.
Well, see, I wouldn't have even known about it if you hadn't posted about it, because Hipstamatic was cool, but I stopped using it because of the camera frame. You know, when you pull the app up, you've got that little teeny tiny window in the back of the camera, which is very retro and it looks cool and all of that. And you take the photo and then you apply the filters. But I don't know. There was something about the experience that I didn't like. And
I used Ogle for all of 3 hours long ago and then stopped. But Ogle is very, it's a beautifully designed app too. And Hipstamatic did a very interesting thing. They released for iPhone, then they went right to Windows Phone and skipped over Android entirely. And I talked to the Hipstamatic folks, and they told me the reason they did that is because they remembered what happened with Instagram. You know, people on the iPhone were like taking beautiful shots with the app, but then when they went Android, you know, all the riffraff came in and started taking crappy photos. And so they eventually will get to Android, but they figured they're going to jump right to Windows Phone because that's a smaller, more devoted, more tech savvy kind of a crowd. And they've done a nice job with the Windows Phone app. The only problem is perform. It's a very lethargic experience. The app just doesn't perform as smoothly as it does on the iPhone. They have to fix that. But other than that, I'm really happy.
So, Julio, one thing that kind of took us by surprise was the Chromecast that came out. And have you had a chance to play around with that?
Yeah, I really, really like it. It took me a little while to sort of wrap my head around what it means exactly. My initial assumption with the Chromecast is you were throwing video from your device to the TV, which is not the case at all. It's basically kind of a internet remote. The Chromecast lets you queue up content from the internet, but then that content goes directly from the internet to your TV, which is kind of genius. But I'm just amazed this computer in this tiny little dongle for $35. It's quite amazing. I haven't honestly used it a lot though because I already have a Sony Google TV powered Sony TV, and it's basically a big honking Android device in my living room. And so the Chromecast is extremely redundant in my household. But for people that have a dumb TV or a second TV, just a TV that doesn't have an internet capabilities at all, but does have an HDMI port, this dramatically alters your TV watching experience because then your phone becomes your remote for the TV, and then you can access Netflix and YouTube, and you know, if you're using Chrome, any video that's playing in a Chrome tab will play just fine on your TV. It's quite, and other video services like Hulu and HBO are gonna eventually make their services Chromecast compatible. So it's a big it's a genius move for Google, especially after what was the name of that orb thing that they released?
Oh yeah,
the Nexus Q.
Which is made by the OOD department of Google. It's a obscure Dr. Who joke there. So that was a bomb, but they came right around and just the Chromecast is impossible to find now. It's completely sold out. I've been to Best Buys and they just don't have the things.
Yeah, but Phil was able to somehow order one.
Yeah, I ordered one, you know, probably late in the day when it debuted, and they were already weeks behind. I actually got mine 4 days ago.
Was the Netflix deal still active, or did you miss out on that?
I already have Netflix, so I don't think I...
Yeah, but you can add 3 months to it for free.
Can you?
I'll have to check on that.
I'll have to check on that.
Get a code. You get a code, and they'll just add it to your account.
Yeah. I'll see what I can do. I didn't realize that was going on. I was too geeked out. So, but I mean, Julio brings up some great points about it, and it takes like little or no time to set up. And a lot of people were surprised. It's like, oh, wait a minute. There's more to it than just the actual dongle. You do have to have a power source for it. But the power source, a lot of HDMI TVs that are HDMI compatible already have a USB port, so you can power it off that, but you also have a power plug if you need to and power it off that as well. So, and I got it basically because, you know, we don't have digital cable on the upstairs TV. So this was an opportunity to actually, you know, watch digital programming without having to, you know, have a digital box somewhere. So, real easy to set up. And it worked immediately out of the box, but I tell you, it really works. For some reason, really works the heck out of my drive on my MacBook. That sucker heats up, let me tell you. And so does the Chromecast.
Oh, really?
Oh, interesting. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it gets a little warm, but you know, that's the way it goes. It's like a, you know, again, I hearken back to that whole Louis C.K. bit. You know, it's like a flying chair. So you know, you get to live with it, Yeah, I there were some glitches as I was kind of scrolling through YouTube channels or YouTube videos. You can't open another window and start another YouTube video. It just the redundancy is not there. So, but I also really like the fact that, and I don't know when I'll use this, you know, in a public space, but the ability to just show your screen. Your notebook screen or laptop screen or even your Android device screen on your television has some really great teaching elements to it.
Right. I would think that this would be the standard kit if you're traveling salesman, you know. You just hook this thing up in the boardroom and connect it and there you go. Right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
The only problem with that scenario, like some people were saying, you know, good device for travelers, and that it's probably not the case because getting your laptop and a Chromecast to play nicely with hotel Wi-Fi is not a working proposition.
Not probably.
Well, just carry an Airport Express then.
That's right. Yeah, Airport Express. That's a good idea. The Chromecast isn't it for boardroom presentations is an interesting alternative to the Apple TV, which has also been positioned as, you know, a device you carry along for business presentations.
Yeah, exactly.
So let me ask you this: in the Chrome tab experience. So I understand that you know it opens up a Chrome video, but when you actually push play on the video, does it go full screen or does it stay within that space on the web page?
I've had all kinds of wacky adventures on that front. And it's been my experience has been highly variable. One issue that I run into is absolutely abysmal video quality when I'm using the play in a tab experience. Just queuing up a YouTube video in the conventional sense, the video looks great. But when I have tried to play video, you know, that's in a Chrome tab, the video quality more often than not has been just too awful to tolerate. So there are definitely some rough edges with this thing that need to be worked out. And I think I'm guessing the Chrome tab feature is, you know, one of those, oh, by the way, we can do this. You know, your mileage may vary, but give it a try kind of a thing.
Well, is it Chrome tab only from the desktop, or if you have a device like a Nexus 7 that does run Chrome on it, can you also do it from there?
I've mostly done it from a laptop, but my understanding is any iteration of Chrome, any version of Chrome, they're all supposed to play with the Chrome tab. But I caution people that they're going to very likely run into some rough edges, and it's probably not something they're going to want to do on a daily basis at the moment. I think they're kind of working some things out.
And how many other services, video services, support Chrome besides YouTube and Netflix?
A number of them have announced but not deployed at this point.
Okay.
And I think it's just Netflix and YouTube at the moment, but a whole raft of others said they're going to do it. HBO, I know, has said so. Hulu Plus has said so. Some others that I'm not remembering right now. So 6 months from now, you're going to have, you're going to have a fairly good selection, I think.
Yeah, I haven't had too much trouble with the, and I haven't spent a ton of time with it. I haven't had too much trouble with the video quality. When you first cast from your notebook or laptop, there is some pixelization, but it does correct pretty quickly. So I was pretty impressed with that.
But people are down. I have been down on Google TV for a long time, and Google has cautioned that Chromecast doesn't mean that Google TV is going away. But Google TV is sort of playing second fiddle to the Chromecast at the moment. But I'm going to be a contrarian and tell people, if you're in the market for a new TV, Google TV is a great experience. I mean, if you're an Android user, having a big honking Android device in your living room is a lot of fun. In the absence of a mythical Apple TV, the Google TV is by far the best internet TV experience available. And I would, if you're in the market for a new TV and you can get one with Google TV built in, I think that's a great way to go.
Well, what about you had written something about the Comcast X1 gear, you know, the new DVR. And I know I had been at an event quite a while ago now, about a year and a half, 2 years ago. I think it was Minnesota High Tech Association, where one of the Comcast VPs talked about the investment that they had made or were making in building out storage at the cable head end in the Twin Cities for on-demand video, because they could see what was coming. And that they were going to lose their TV franchise to internet video providers. And so is this, do you think, the solution to that?
Well, I'm just speaking strictly from a consumer and Comcast customer point of view. The Comcast experience before was abysmal. You know, the menus looked terrible. The DVR was really, really difficult to understand and to use. You know, storage capacity was very limited on the device. I mean, just in the age of the iPad and Android and you know, where you're sort of spoiled because you have all these gorgeous, really easy to use interfaces, the Comcast experience was abysmal. X1 is just a vast improvement because you're suddenly using a TV menu experience that is comparable to, you know, using an iPad. It's just beautiful. All of your content is one place. All you have to do is flick a button to go from on demand to your DVR to the TV grid.
Yep.
You can alphabetically, you know, type in a program or an actor or a movie or whatever to pull it right up. It's all integrated into one experience that looks really, really nice. I mean, just think Hulu Plus, think Netflix, you know, all of these services that you're using on your TV, the Apple TV even, and the X1 gear is comparable in elegance and ease of use to that. They have a new remote, which is which is much nicer than that old brick they used to have. So really, really, really nice. You're just obviously paying you know, cord cutters are cord cutters for a reason. Comcast is very expensive.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
Comcast will stress that if you go from the old gear to X1, you're not paying any more money. It's comparable. In fact, it's the standard gear now for new customers. But even so, it's very expensive. So I'm the wannabe cord cutter in my household. I keep, you know, threatening to cut the cable. But it's ultimately difficult to do that because whenever I get on the phone and say and tell Comcast, you know, you're kind of expensive. You know, I think I'm gonna quit at this point. They will do all they can to sweeten the deal, to negotiate. And so I've been paying kind of a standard $160 a month for a couple of years now. And every time my Comcast sort of senses that I'm about to leave, they start cramming more stuff into it. Like right before
they sense you're leaving.
So I had standard cable plus HBO and Stars and no DVR. That was kind of my experience. But now for the same $160, they gave me X1 with DVR capability and all the premium channels.
Wow.
So I never pay any more money, but they keep jamming more stuff into it. And so it's always very hard to snip the cord because it gets more and more appealing. So at this point, you know, we're kind of sticking with it because, you know, Homeland is coming up. And now we can watch that. We couldn't watch that before. And so it's good. Exciting.
Well, and then you've got HBO Go and other apps that are tying into your subscription. Yes,
exactly.
And it is, it's doing the same thing for us. We're like, oh geez. Yeah. I think we'll keep getting HBO, cause there are several things we like to watch on it.
But that gets back to my earlier point. The Comcast on-screen experience was just absolutely abysmal.
Compared to
HBO Go. HBO Go on your TV or on your iPad is really nice. Comcast, just in terms of elegance and ease of use and just, you know, pure eye candy sexiness, Comcast has totally caught up. X1 is really nice.
Well,
I don't want to use HBO Go anymore. I just fire up the X1 and I'm off to the races.
So, I just have to throw this in because it was so cool, and I'll put a link in the show notes to the store, obviously in a photo. But Micro Center in St. Louis Park's got a new area devoted to do it yourself, and they've got Arduino kits and robotics stuff, and they had
Raspberry Pi, and yeah,
they had a whole video game area near the Mac store within a store, and they basically ripped it all out and are replacing it with essentially a maker section.
Yeah, it's a great idea.
I think
really
so
is.
Too.
And that's really long overdue. You know, Micro Center used to be this horrible maze, and you have to talk to someone to find anything. Now, I was there this week, and it's very organized, and
yep.
you can find stuff now, which is crazy.
Yeah, it's much more cleaned up. It, you know, it was like this sort of geek treasure hunt that you used to be on, and they've floor planned it, and it really looks very, very good. But and I did check, you know, just to look to see what the prices were like on the Arduino kits and things like that, and they're cost competitive with what's online. So it doesn't look like you're sacrificing anything by buying it, you know, here at the stores. So.
And they sell a lot of stuff from Adafruit and Make and, you know, places that you would buy online anyway.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, no, it's good. So if you're doing a project and you need a part, you can just go down there and pick it up, and you don't have to wait, you know, a week to get it online.
Well, do they sell the SmartThings gear there too as well, or
no, not yet. Okay. I don't think SmartThings has put their stuff in distribution yet.
Okay, I've been playing with SmartThings while on vacation, and it's fun, and it's a very fun and interesting technology. I don't know if it's quite ready for consumer prime time at the moment, because just like trying to do things that you'd think were like really simple, you know, take like 10 steps instead of 2 steps. So I think they really need to polish their technology so, you know, consumers can grok it a little better, but I've been having a ton of fun with it.
So I've got X10, and I've had X10 for over a decade. And it's just to do lights when we're gone. Mm-hmm. Why would I use SmartThings to do that? Because my objection is that it looks like it gets expensive very quickly to get all these sensors.
I don't have a good answer for you, because if X10 is working for you, I can't really see why you'd want to get that. I think SmartThings is not what it does now. I think it's the potential. Once you get a solid stable of third-party accessory makers on board that with devices that are compatible with SmartThings, it's going to start looking appealing. But right now, the basic SmartThings technology does stuff that, you know, geeks like you look at it and say, I've been doing that for a decade. You know, what's the big deal? And I don't have a good answer for you. But interesting things are starting to happen. Like are you familiar with DropCam video cameras? Yeah, DropCams are now compatible. The Philips Hue bulbs are going to be compatible. The Belkin Wemo technology is going to be compatible. So there's this list of coming soon technologies that are very, you know, high. They're big brands, very well known. They're slowly going to become sort of woven into the SmartThings fabric. You know, lesser known device makers are going to be doing likewise. So if you look at, I think if you look at SmartThings a year from now, it's going to start looking a lot more appealing, especially for people that want to do the stuff that you, Tim, have already been doing for a long time. They just want to get into that, and they want to do that in kind of a sexy way with an iPhone app, you know, that's really cool. At that point, it's going to be a little bit more of a going proposition. Your objection is very well taken. I can think of many other ways to do the things that SmartThings does now, you know, possibly at a lesser price.
Yeah, so by combining Raspberry Pi or Arduino or both of those with existing older technologies.
Yeah.
Well, I guess what they've done is they've put this hub thing around, and they've got a nice mobile integration, so it makes it a lot easier for normal people to do this kind of stuff.
And that's the problem. SmartThings is positioning itself as, you know, the Raspberry Pi, the Arduino, the X10 technology for the masses. It's being positioned as something that is more. It's nicely packaged. All your stuff is in the box. It's easy to set up and so forth, and that's all theoretical at this point, because my experience, I'm pretty tech savvy, and I've had to do multiple phone calls with SmartThings techs just to figure out how things work.
Well, so I'll just jump in on it, because I've had it now for quite a while, and the one thing that I find difficult that's actually laughingly easy with Wemo, for example, because Wemo has if this then that channels. Yes. You know, the IFTTT site, and so they have channels, so you can go in and you can easily say, I want, you know, if this happens, then I want these things to happen, and you can start to stack them and make compound type of runtimes. And I think that's what SmartThings needs, is they need a place where you can either do it on your phone, but you can drag and drop things so that you can create scenarios. That's been the one thing that I've had a real hard time with. I've got cool stuff like, you know, if the back door opens, the door from the garage, then the lamp turns on in the mudroom. Mm-hmm. So that's a little thing. I've also got a closure out on the garage door. So if it's nighttime and the garage door is still open, it sends me an SMS. Mm-hmm. And then I have the presence sensor so that when I walk in the living room, the light turns on. So it's just little stuff like that, right?
I'm talking about
SmartThings. Okay. So I'm still goofing with it. And I have the motion detector set up too, even though I'm not really using that. If I walk out in the family room, the motion detector turns the light on, because they talk to one another.
And how's it working?
It works great.
Good.
Yeah, it works great. The only issue for me is building something that's really complex is really hard. So, for example, I want to be able to at 7:02 p.m. and then happen randomly every day, I want the light in the living room to turn on, and then when I walk upstairs, it takes me, you know, 18 seconds, and then I want the light to turn on up there, and then I want it to turn off after a minute, and then have the bathroom light turn on. You know, stuff like that, right?
You are a creature of habit.
No. Right. If I'm gone. If I'm gone. I want to get the, we've got Hunter Douglas shades, and there's a motor for those, so I could remotely shut all the shades in my house. But I want to be able to create this this I'm away scenario so that at a set time every day, which would vary randomly, I want all of these different things to happen simultaneously so that the house essentially closes itself up. And then in the morning, it's 6:30-ish in the morning, I want them to all the curtains to come up, you know, the shades to come up. And doing those kind of complex behaviors is really hard right now.
So let me ask you this. So this is one of the things that I want to do, which is during the week have a sensor that senses if my garage door is open or not.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's open for more than 15 minutes, close it.
Yes.
But I want it to remain open on the weekend for maybe half an hour, right? Just in case I'm gone and I don't notice it and the thing's open, right? So it would automatically close. Is it easy to do that with SmartThings?
I can't answer that because I haven't done that exact thing, but there is an app that somebody created that does the notification if the door is open for a set time. So you just tell it how much time.
Oh, okay. And then you can remotely close it.
Well, you can remotely close it if you have one of the power outlet. You have to have your garage door opener plugged into one of the power outlets, SmartThings right. power outlets. Then you could tell that you could have it happen automatically. You know, if it's open for more than X number of minutes, go ahead and close it.
Right. Okay.
So, yeah.
So for stuff like that, maybe there's a, you know, there's a justification for it. But for doing lights, it sounds like I should just stay on X10 for a while.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you can't do much more. And there is actually a list of compatible products. I mean, it is getting better. But to your point, Julio, they've got a ways to go. There's no question about it.
And the one situation I run into again and again is I can sort of cook up the scenario in my head. You know, if this happens, make that happen kind of a thing. And the idea is very simple. And my assumption going in is that SmartThings has a way to just, you know, just do this, do that. And I'm all set up. And the SmartThings guys come back and tell me, oh, yeah. We hear you. We want to make this simpler. But at this point, you know, it takes 10 steps. And it gets frustrating when I run into that again and again.
Well, here's the one thing that I put in place. I had an issue this winter because we had a thaw and then it freeze again and it snowed. And so if, thank God, I was home, but it was a little after 9 a.m. and I heard this high-pitched noise. And I'm like, what the hell is that? And we had finished our lower level a year and a half, 2 years earlier. And prior to that, we'd had a flood downstairs because our power went out and the sump pump flooded. And so I had a company come out. We spent about $9,000. Most of it was covered by insurance to have new drain tile put in and a gigantic sump pump and all of that. Well, here's the kicker. The kicker is because the place that it drains was frozen, there's no place for the water to go. So it kept backing up and it filled up the basin. And the basin holds, it's like a 55-gallon drum sunk into my basement floor. Mm. Well, it was the alarm going off, the moisture sensor. The kicker is that there's a SmartSense moisture sensor for SmartThings, and it would have sent me a text message.
Mm-hmm.
And thank God I was at home. Otherwise, the basement would have flooded, and it would have been a disaster. So it's just stuff like that, you know, more and more. That's the promise that is being fulfilled to a degree already. But again, we got a ways to go.
Yeah, I agree.
So cool, cool.
Well, it wouldn't be a Minivate Gang podcast without a little Apple speculation at the end.
Oh, geez.
Really?
So, Julio, what do you make of all these rumors that are out there? Are we going to see a Retina iPad Mini?
That's a very good question. My hunch is no.
And do we really care?
Yes, we do. If we're in the market for one, like I am.
Oh, okay, sorry.
I'm waffling. Do I upgrade my Nexus 7 to the new one with the killer screen, or do I wait for the iPad Mini Retina?
Well, I'll tell you right off the bat, the Nexus 7 is really nice, the new one. I've been carrying it around everywhere, and I'm totally hooked on it, and that's surprising because I used to heavily favor iPads to Android tablets, but the Nexus 7 is very thin, very portable. The high resolution screen is just jaw dropping. The battery life is very good. It has the compatibility with the wireless Qi charging. Are you guys familiar with that? You buy these charging pads and you just slap that sucker on it at night. It's all charged in the morning. And the Android tablet experience has become very good. And so at this point, I'm starting to wonder why I would spend $125 more for an iPad when I can get this very affordable, very nice Android tablet. So that's kind of the big question. If Apple comes around and releases a Retina iPad Mini, I might start to waffle a little bit. But you know, based on what I have right in my hands right now, it's just I'm totally hooked on the new Nexus 7. I really love it.
I almost bought one. I spent some time at a Best Buy mobile store with it.
Which, you tell that story quite a lot.
I know. Why don't you just go over and do it?
No, because here's why. I have three Apple TVs in the house. I have chargers all over the place I could use those for USB and plug in a Nexus. But the car cords now, we're shifting to the new iOS-based charging type, and I just bought those Bose 20i's, that headset, for $300, the noise canceling earphones, and you have to either buy the Android version or the iOS version, and so it makes no sense for me because I bought into the ecosystem and I'm invested. That makes no sense for me now to start to shift, other than just to have one to goof with, which I may do. But for sure, I'm going to buy an iPad Mini Retina, and I think they have no choice. If they don't, it's going to die.
Yeah. So yeah, that's a good point. If you're invested in the Apple ecosystem, it's kind of hard to justify Android tablet. And I'm sort of there. I have a lot of Apple technology in my house, but at the same time, I'm so invested in the Google Cloud. And I'm such a Google power user. I'm at the point where I'm at a crossroads, and I can go in either direction and be very happy.
Yep. Well, and I know. I'm invested in Google too, and I don't know. We'll just have to see. So.
All right. Any other shocking Apple stuff? Like, will they do this this watch thing or?
Well, that won't happen at this event that's coming up, and the iPhone is probably going to be a yawner, just the same form factor. But again, back to my earlier point, if they get more battery life in there and they vastly improve the camera, that'll be good. If they don't do that, I'm going to be really disappointed, and
the stock will drop like a rock.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm more and more enamored with Android, and so the iPhone will be a lot less appealing to me.
Yeah. Well, the big thing that I thought happened with respect to Apple was Carl Icahn tweeting his $1 billion position in Apple and that he had a nice chat with Tim Cook, CEO, and the stock goes up. And in fact, I ended up selling a couple hundred shares at 503 in intraday trading just because I could and I wanted to. And
what'd you do with the money?
Well, it's just parked right now. I haven't done anything yet. But
he's saving it for the Retina iPad Mini.
Yeah. No, you know what? I had to sell it because we're way overweight with our position in Apple in our 401k.
He's bailing, so, folks.
No, I'm not. Right. I am bailing. Not. He's no, bailing. I'm not. But there I just I've gotten so much crap from my brother-in-law.
He's
and
bailing.
Our
he's going to take a big position in RIM next. That's
yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm going to short it though. That's the.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
So that's the headline today. That's, yeah. Let's be putting that on the fun graphic. Steve Borsch bails from Apple.
No.
There you go. No. Borsch's sell-off of Apple stock.
No. If I buy a Moto X, then get nervous.
I don't know. The Moto X looks kind of interesting.
Looks good. Looks good.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I still, you know, because I still like the way the HTC One is constructed. I like the size better of the Moto X, but it's, you know, it's very plasticky, I think. So, though I haven't really seen it in person yet.
Yeah.
No. Well, have you seen one, Julio?
I'm sorry?
Have you seen a Moto X?
Have you touched one?
I think I'm getting one on Monday or Tuesday. I haven't seen one yet.
Okay.
But to Tim's point, the HTC One is definitely the nicest looking Android phone available right now. I don't like the way they've customized the Android operating system. But it's a beautiful phone. Absolutely lovely.
Yeah. I was talking to one of my buddies with Sprint, and he's rooted his HTC One, and boy, I tell you, it's slicker than snot on the, you know, the base Android. It's just much faster and battery life is better. And yeah.
So did he use the Will Wheaton rooting tool?
I didn't ask it. He was just showing me the interface, and it's just, you know, it's very Androidish and fast, very fast.
See, the Moto X to me looks like a 4S, an iPhone 4S.
You know, yeah, but you can customize the color. You can get that neon blue that you wanted to do.
You can get it with a wood pattern. Isn't that great?
Yeah, that's your year.
Wow.
It's true.
Like, just like those station wagons of old.
God, just think of the innovation. See, I just wanted to mention, and we're not going to go through the events that are upcoming, but the only one I wanted to mention was Micro Center is doing these in-store clinics. And Saturday and Sunday, the 24th and 25th, they're doing one on Raspberry Pi at 2:00.
Mm-hmm.
And so as part of, I'm sure it's part of this whole do-it-yourself maker adventure section in the store. But if anybody's interested and they want to go out to this to see, you know, what's all the buzz about this Raspberry Pi thing, be a great place to go do it.
It would.
Yeah.
It would.
Yeah.
So
anything else we're missing? Julio, anything else you want to add?
The only thing I would suggest iPhone users check out is the Yahoo Weather app, which you've probably heard about, but it's become an obsession of mine because, as many people know, the Yahoo Weather app ties into a Flickr and pulls up photos taken by Flickr users at the location where you happen to be, and the photos that come up show the kind of weather that you're experiencing at your location at the moment.
That's
so
very cool.
And that, you know, that's all well and good. The reason I've become obsessed is the same reason I used to collect dinosaur stickers when I was a kid. I'm just obsessed with getting a new one. Every time a new weather photo, you know, Twin Cities weather photo that comes up that I haven't seen, I throw it in a Google photo album, and I've amassed this vast collection of gorgeous Twin Cities photos, you know, via Yahoo Weather. Every time I see a new one, my iPhone, I screenshot it in portrait mode and in landscape mode, and then they throw it up into Google Plus. And I've quite, you know, you can just go through my collection of Yahoo Weather photos and get it, if you're not from the Twin Cities, and get a really good idea of what the Twin Cities is like. And then it suddenly occurred to me, hey, I'm from San Juan. I can do the same thing for, you know, Puerto Rico photos. So that's kind of the thing I'm doing right now. And I cannot overstate how obsessed I am with this weather app.
I'm a little concerned about you. You've got so many obsessions. It's no wonder you don't sleep.
Exactly. So if Yahoo keeps coming up with, you know, with mini hit after mini hit after mini hit like this, I think there's hope for them.
That's well, I just great. Wanted to throw out there for those of us on Android, the Android app also looks very, very nice, and it has the Flickr integration.
Oh, good. I haven't checked that out. I'll do that.
Yep. Yep. Looks good.
Cool.
And their widgets are nice, too. I use their widget on my various Nexus devices. So
You know, so, hey guys, I'm gonna bail. Looks like I get my ass over to Minneapolis, but this has been a lot of fun. I really appreciate it.
Well, I'll take the rest of you with you. So
yeah, we're gonna sign off.
Exactly. So
yeah, thanks everybody
thanks for joining us, Julio. We'll see everybody next week on
the Minivate Gang Podcast. Take care, guys.
See you guys.
Okay.
Nice job.
Bye-bye. Bye.